covered with black flags, which represent the mourning atmosphere. You know, it's more than a custom. Actually, it's a culture in Iran that in the month of Muharram, people install black flags at their doors as a sign of grief for the tragic martyrdom of Imam Hussein, peace upon him. I am now at the entrance of the Tekiye, and there is a huge crowd outside. They are going inside one by one. Well, the main door of the Tekiye is more than 3.5 meters high and is made of almond tree wood. At the door, there is a collection of old Taziyeh stuff, old samovars and teapots, which were used for serving the mourners in the pastime. At this point, you feel like you have traveled to the past. Well, now I'm inside the Tekiye. Years full of people, men, women, old, young, even children, have come to show their respect to Imam Hussein, peace upon him. The ceremony is about to start.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, how to deal with the loss of a loved one and the story of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, it is such an honor to be here at your service, dear friends, dear listeners. In today's episode, we are talking about how to deal with the loss of a loved one and the story of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. If you allow, I would like to start with the story of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And because you are all quite familiar with the story of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, I don't find it necessary to talk about a lot of the details. But of course, as a general relating of what occurred, we find that many of the companions and the family members of Imam Hussein alayhi salam were martyred in the land of Karbala on the 10th of Muharram, in the year 61 Hijri. Now, this martyrdom occurred at the hands of the forces of evil under the command of Umar ibn Sa'd, who was under the command of Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, and of course who was under the command of Yazid ibn Muawiyah. May Allah curse every single one of them. Now, they had come to force Imam Hussein alayhi salam to pay allegiance, and this allegiance would mean that Imam Hussein alayhi salam was okay with the actions of these forces of evil. Now, a loss of a loved one, what a better place to learn how to deal with the loss of a loved one than this very story of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, who lost 72 individuals who were his beloveds, whether they were his companions or there were his own family members, including his brother and his nephew and his own sons. in such a short amount of time to lose so many loved ones is truly tragic and is truly very painful. But we find that Imam Hussein alayhi salam was able to bear this loss with grace and with the help of the Almighty Allah.
Why is my heart set on fire when I hear your name?
As-salamu alayk, ya Aba Abdullah.
Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. Dear friends, we're talking about how to deal with the loss of a loved one and the story of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Of course, in the previous segment, we talked about the story of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and how he lost 72 of his loved ones in a matter of a very short time. When it comes to dealing with the loss of a loved one, we have to first and foremost rely on the Almighty Allah. We have to continuously request and speak and beseech, supplicate and rely, communicate, talk, interact, have a relationship with the Almighty Allah. It is that speaking with the Almighty Allah, it is that relationship with the Almighty Allah that gives us a sense of comfort. It brings us security. It brings us tranquility when we are dealing with the loss of a loved one. Two, we have to realize that this world is temporary. Everybody, one day or the other, is going to pass away to the next life. And it is the next life which is the permanent abode. And inshallah, by the grace and the favor and the blessings and the mercy and the compassionate of the Almighty Allah, we too will join our loved ones in the next life. And it will be a life which is beautiful beyond imagination. And the last thing that we have to keep in mind is that this world for the believer is really a trap. It is a prison. It is a cage. And so the individual who has passed on, inshallah, has passed on to a better place. And this is another thing that we need to do before we close the program. And that is that we should try to send as many good deeds to those individuals, whether it is the reciting of the Holy Quran as a blessing and as a gift to that individual, reciting Salah, a two-unit prayer, Salah for that individual, or giving charity in the name of that individual, and to try to remember the positive aspects of that individual, and inshallah, you will be able to deal with the loss of a loved one in a very Islamic lifestyle. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parsetoday.ir/en, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Won't be love tomorrow. You can save yourself tonight and go. A deep silence fills the air.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من. این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوة القرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزای لازمی است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
It's a despicable act, a sacrilegious one, the desecration of Islam's holiest book, the Quran, an act deemed okay under the Western notion of so-called freedom of expression. The protests are over the actions of an Iraqi refugee who burned pages of the Quran outside of Stockholm's main mosque last month. This time around, Salwan Mamika stepped on the Quran but did not burn it. He was responsible for promoting an event in Sweden for people to kick the Quran, which damaged the holy book. This act was enough to trigger renewed condemnations across the Muslim world. Protests broke out in many Muslim countries, from Iraq, Turkey, the United Arab Emirates, Jordan, and Morocco, to Iran. Last time around, Muslim nations filed a motion at the UN Human Rights Body, calling on countries to review their laws and to plug gaps that may, quote, impede the prevention and prosecution of acts and advocacy of religious hatred.
Draft proposal L23, as already revised, is therefore adopted. Copies.
The UN Human Rights Council approved the resolution on religious hatred and bigotry. But as with all of the Council's resolutions, it is not legally binding.
In voting against the resolution, a message has been sent to billions of people of faith across the world that their commitment to prevent religious hatred is merely a lip service.
The 57-country Organization of Islamic Cooperation has said international law and other collective measures are needed to prevent future incidents involving the desecration of the Quran. Several Muslim countries have summoned Swedish envoys to convey their protest over the desecration of the Holy Quran. Iraq has already expelled the Swedish ambassador and has recalled its own envoy, while Iran says it will not admit a new Swedish ambassador.
We urge the Swedish and other European authorities to take urgent and effective measures. Mr. President, any doubts or delays in condemning and preventing such actions only reinforce perception of double standards and justify abuses of freedom of expression.
Leader of Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, has called on all Muslim states to expel Swedish envoys to show the world that they are united in rejecting any act of desecration against their sanctities. In order to prevent Sweden from allowing the Quran desecration to take place repeatedly, calls are growing for isolating the country, in which one move would be to boycott Swedish products. The burning of the Quran has been approved by the West under the banner of freedom of expression. Sweden's Deputy Prime Minister, Ebba Busch of the Christian Democrats, said, "Sweden does not bend its back to Islam. Burning scriptures is reprehensible but not illegal." And this is what the U.S. reaction was on the previous incidents. The U.S. State Department condemned the burning, but added that issuing the permit for the demonstration supported freedom of expression. Isn't that indirectly implying that it's okay to burn the Quran while displaying sympathy towards the sacrilegious act? Islamophobia, which is defined as the dislike of or prejudice against Islam or Muslims, remains a prevalent problem in the U.S., especially after the 9/11 attacks. Many incidents are testament to that. For example, in the U.S., Pastor Terry Jones organized a number of Quran burnings, sparking violence in West Asia and beyond. During U.S.'s occupation in Afghanistan, U.S. troops burned copies of the Quran by sending several books to the incinerator. Sam Basil, an Israeli who made the offensive film against Muslims, The Innocence of Muslims, enraged many Muslim countries. The filmmaker said, "Islam is a cancer, period." And there's no denying that Trump's presidency normalized being an anti-Muslim bigot, who made it socially acceptable to be overtly anti-Muslim. And finally, who can forget Salman Rushdie, the man who provoked and offended the Muslim world, in which he exploited the freedom of expression in order to offend Muslim beliefs in his book, The Satanic Verses. European politicians are also guilty of Islamophobia. Dutch politician Geert Wilders of the Party of Freedom ran on a platform to reverse the Islamization of the Netherlands by closing mosques and Islamic schools, banning the Quran, banning Muslim migrants, and forbidding women from wearing headscarves. The French President Emmanuel Macron promoted the Islam of France, a brand of Islam to be particular to France, in an effort to reform Islam, which included the training of Islamic clerics and their funding to fit the French Western version of what Islam should be. These actions pose the question, are these anti-Islamic acts meant to dominate the religion's ideology and Muslims? After all, Muslims comprise an estimated 1.8 billion or more than 24% of the world population. The official religion in 26 countries in Asia, Sub-Saharan Africa, North Africa, and West Asia. Having dominance over the Muslim population in Western countries, especially, may be a concerted effort to marginalize Muslims in favor of the other white segments of the social strata. Provoking Muslims this way may be used as an excuse to accuse Muslims of violence and in turn extremism. The Israeli President Isaac Herzog has visited the United States and was welcomed by the U.S. establishment, including President Biden and senior congressmen. But a number of U.S. lawmakers, frustrated with the racist policies of the Israeli regime toward Palestinians, boycotted Herzog's speech to the U.S. Congress. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, Jamal Bowman, Cori Bush, and Nydia Velasquez, along with Senator Bernie Sanders, skipped the address. Ilhan Omar, an African-American congresswoman, was the first to make such a decision. In a tweet, Omar said the invitation, which comes during the deadliest year for Palestinians in the West Bank history, sends a wrong signal at a wrong time.
So let's just begin by setting up the context that this is 2023 in the aftermath of the legacy human rights organizations, Israeli human rights organizations, UN committees, UN agencies, as well as multiple scholars and independent investigations have all concluded that Israel oversees an apartheid regime.
The Israeli regime barred Omar and Palestinian-born Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib from visiting the occupied territories in 2019 over their support for Palestinian rights and membership in the Anti-Israel Caucus. Rights advocates have said that Herzog's visit has been a boost to the unquestionable U.S. support for Israel at a time when many of them are asking Biden to pressure Netanyahu's cabinet to end abuses against Palestinians.
And let's just get this record straight here. This is not something that's made up. The United Nations, Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, Israel's own largest human rights organization, B'Tselem, all agree that Israel is an apartheid state. To assert otherwise, Mr. Speaker, in the face of this just body of evidence is an attempt to deny the reality and to normalize violence of apartheid. Israel is an apartheid state. The government is deeply problematic in the way that they are proceeding in the structure of oppression.
The boycott has signaled increasing tensions among Democrats over the unwavering support of the U.S. establishment toward Israel. Tensions between House Democrats reached a boiling point after Pramila Jayapal, chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, described Israel as a racist state while speaking at a conference in Chicago.
I want you to know that we have been fighting to make it clear that Israel is a racist state, that the Palestinian people deserve self-determination and autonomy, that the dream of a two-state solution is slipping away from us.
Following the remarks of Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, resolution was approved by the U.S. House of Representatives that voiced support for the Israeli regime. The resolution turned a blind eye to the crimes that were recently committed by Israeli troops in the occupied West Bank and ignored frequent settler violence against the people of Palestine. Israeli settlers also frequently attack Palestinian towns and villages under the protection of the Israeli military forces. Israel has been practicing an apartheid regime, a system of extreme racial segregation of people against Palestinians since 1948. That year, the regime claimed existence across Palestine after a Western-backed war, during which tens of thousands of Palestinians were forcibly expelled from their homes, villages were depopulated, and thousands were killed.
The United States is not just a bystander here. The United States is complicit and a pillar of Israeli apartheid in its provision on unequivocal financial, diplomatic, and military support. That but for that support, Israel could not sustain this regime, which is not surprising. Which is not surprising at all, because the U.S. was the last pillar to fall, the last domino to fall in sustaining apartheid in South Africa, where it had to fall in line with everyone else. But during apartheid South Africa and the international campaign against it, during that regime's tenure, the United States issued the most vetoes within the Security Council to protect apartheid.
The world's prominent rights groups have already raised the alarm that the occupying regime is morphing into an apartheid system that gives Palestinians second-class status and is designed to maintain Zionist hegemony from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea. The Israeli oppression of Palestinians has witnessed a sharp rise under Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's extremist coalition cabinet, which is composed of far-right Zionist parties that oppose Palestinian statehood and support the expansion of settlements. Internally, the Israeli regime has also witnessed growing rifts and fragmentations, and the right-wing cabinet of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is pushing ahead with his controversial judicial overhaul plans. Just days ago, hundreds of reservists held a protest rally in Tel Aviv and vowed to no longer report for duty in protest against Netanyahu's proposed judicial changes. Protest organizers believe the increasing involvement of reservists would be a game-changer that could make Netanyahu scrap his scheme. The drive by Netanyahu's far-right cabinet to change the judiciary system and to strip the Supreme Court of some of its powers has sparked unprecedented protests in Israel since January.
The United Nations has lashed out to the UK for its controversial immigration legislation, warning it could have profound consequences for the people in need of international protection. The UN refugee and human rights chief, Volker Turk, condemned the passage of the bill as a breach of international law and warned it would expose refugees to grave risks. He said the so-called illegal migration bill, which has been passed by the parliament and now awaits the formality of the royal assent from King Charles III, is, quote, at variance with the country's obligations under international human human rights and refugee law and will have profound consequences for the people in need of international protection. Turk also added that the bill would set a, quote, worrying precedent for dismantling asylum-related obligations that other countries, including in Europe, may be tempted to follow. The bill would outlaw asylum claims by all rivals via the channel and other illegal routes and deport them either to their country of origin or a third nation such as Rwanda. UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi also condemned the passage of the legislation as a breach of international law. This new legislation significantly erodes the legal framework that has protected so many.
But the problem with the government's bill from international law perspective is that it plans to abolish the right, and it's a very important right, of asylum seekers to apply in any country where they end up for asylum.
The plan to deport asylum seekers has been criticized by some opposition politicians, lawyers and civil rights groups as inhumane, cruel and ineffective. The Scottish Refugee Council, a charity that provides advice and services to refugees in the UK, said in a tweet that it's devastating to know the UK's illegal migration bill is now set to become law. Enver Solomon, the chief executive of the Refugee Council, has also criticised the law, saying the overall bill remains unworkable and will lead to human misery and huge cost to the taxpayer.
And so the government's got no plan. It's got a gimmick, which is the Rwanda scheme, a gimmick, which has already cost the taxpayer £140 million and nobody's been removed.
The Conservative government's flagship legislation will prevent most people from claiming asylum in the UK. The legislation is central to the Prime Minister's pledge to stop small boats crossing the English Channel. The government claims they will prevent people from claiming asylum in the UK if they arrive through unauthorised means. Deportation flights to Rwanda are unlikely to start until next year at the earliest and will still hinge on a ruling by the Supreme Court on their legality later this year.
The deficiencies in the asylum system in Rwanda are such that there are substantial grounds for believing that there is a real risk that persons sent to Rwanda will be returned to their home countries where they faced persecution or other inhumane treatment when in fact they have a good claim for asylum. In that sense, Rwanda is not a safe third country.
Britain struck an initial £140 million deal with Rwanda last year. The first planned Rwanda deportation flight was blocked a year ago in a last-minute ruling by the European Court of Human Rights. Last year, a record 45,755 people came to Britain in small boats across the Channel, mainly from France. More than 12,000 have arrived this year, a rate similar to 2022. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, who has vowed to stop the boats, has insisted the Rwanda plan would have an important deterrent effect by showing that no one who arrives illegally in the UK will be allowed to stay. Some analysts believe the Tories' insistence on the bill is partly due to the Conservative government's poor ratings in the polls. The governing Conservative Party has plummeted in the polls in recent years. As things stand, it's very unlikely they would win the next general election.
What can you ask me about? And it's a mess. You know, typical of a Tory government. Sorry, I've got nothing good to say about them.
I think we need a change, but there's not really anybody that's suitable, I don't think, because they're all on the same ilk, all think the same. So, but we do need a change.
The Home Office Minister said the number of small boat arrivals had overwhelmed the UK's asylum system and was costing taxpayers £6 million a day to provide accommodation.
The Kremlin has said that Russia has halted its participation in a deal that allowed Ukraine to ship grain through the Black Sea to parts of the world struggling with hunger. Hours earlier, an explosion knocked out Russia's bridge to Crimea in what Moscow called an attack by Ukrainian sea drones, killing two people. The road bridge is a major artery for Russian troops fighting in Ukraine. Moscow said there was no link between the attack and its decision to suspend the grain deal over what it called a failure to meet its demands to implement a parallel agreement easing rules for its own food and fertilizer exports. The United Nations and Turkey brokered the landmark accord with Ukraine and Russia in July last year, which came with a separate agreement to facilitate shipments of Russian food and fertilizer that Moscow insists has not been applied. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said on Monday, hours before the Black Sea Grain Initiative was set to expire, that Russia would return to the deal immediately if its demands about its exports were met.
The Black Sea agreements are no longer in effect. The deadline, as the Russian president said earlier, is July the 17th. Unfortunately, the part of these Black Sea agreements concerning Russia has not yet been fulfilled. As a result, it has been terminated.
Russia has complained that not enough grain has reached poor countries, but the UN says the arrangement has benefited those states by helping lower food prices by more than 20% globally. According to the UN, as of Monday, almost 8 million tons of goods have been shipped to China, nearly 25% of the 32.9 million tons exported, while almost 44% of exports were shipped to high-income countries. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said his country was prepared to continue grain exports despite Russia's withdrawal from the deal.
Even without the Russian Federation, everything must be done so that we can use this Black Sea corridor. We're not afraid. We've been approached by companies that own ships. They said that they're ready to continue shipment.
Meanwhile, Russia's move to exit the Black Sea Grain Export Agreement will deal a blow to global food security and result in higher food prices. Wheat and corn prices on global commodities markets jumped Monday after Russia pulled out of a crucial deal allowing the export of grain from Ukraine. The collapse of the pact threatens to push up food prices for consumers worldwide and tip millions into hunger. Meanwhile, UN Chief Antonio Guterres deeply regretted Russia's decision.
Today's decision by the Russian Federation will strike a blow to people in need everywhere. But it will not stop our efforts to facilitate the unimpeded access to global markets for food products and fertilizers from both Ukraine and the Russian Federation.
Guterres also signaled the termination of a UN pact with Moscow to help facilitate Russia's agricultural and fertilizer exports in return for the safe export of Ukrainian grain. According to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, before the war, Ukraine was the fifth largest wheat exporter globally, accounting for 10% of exports. According to the United Nations, it is also by far the biggest exporter of sunflower oil, accounting for 46% of the world's exports. Last year, economic shocks that included the impacts of the Ukraine war and the pandemic were the main reasons for acute food insecurity in 27 countries, affecting nearly 84 million people. That's according to a report by the Food Security Information Network, a data-sharing platform funded by the European Union and the United States. The FSIN defines acute food insecurity as lacking enough food to the extent that it puts the person's life or livelihood at risk. The International Rescue Committee said in November that the deal's collapse would hit those on the brink of starvation the most. The warning came after Moscow suspended its participation in the pact for several days following drone attacks in Sevastopol, a port city in Crimea.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسانك.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم. السلام عليكم respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners. Welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions on practical tajweed rules and the recitation of the Quran Kareem. I'm really glad to say that we are having brothers Ali Nasir, Hassan Nasrullah, Hussein Ruhullah, and
Fawad
Haider. I really welcome you all. Welcome. How are you?
Fine, sir.
Fine, inshallah. Okay. Ali Nasir,
Hussein. Alhamdulillah, sir.
Alhamdulillah.
Alhamdulillah. And Fawad.
Fine.
Fine. Okay. Inshallah, today we'll talk about Ayah 101 in Surah An-Nisa, page 94. So, brothers and sisters, as you're listening, if you have the Quran with you, please turn to page 94, Ayah 101 of Surah An-Nisa. So, let's start our class by listening to the recitation of this ayah.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وإذا ضربتم في الأرض فليس عليكم جناح أن تقصروا من الصلاة إن خفتم أن يفتنكم الذين كفروا إن الكافرين كانوا لكم عدوا مبينا.
Great. Nice recitation. MashaAllah. MashaAllah. Let me read it. We'll have a short explanation. Then inshallah we'll move on to the tajweed rules. So, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Allah Almighty says in this ayah, وَإِذَا ضَرَبْتُمْ فِي الْأَرْضِ فَلَيْسَ عَلَيْكُمْ جُنَاحٌ أَن تَقْصُرُوا مِنَ الصَّلَاةِ مِنَ الصَّلَاةِ إِنْ خِفْتُمْ أَن يَفْتِنَكُمْ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا إِنَّ الْكَافِرِينَ كَانُوا لَكُمْ عَدُوًا مُبِينًا. I read it without tajweed rules, okay? Then inshallah we'll practice the tajweed rules. So what does Allah Almighty say? وَإِذَا ضَرَبْتُمْ فِي الْأَرْضِ. When you journey in the land, when you travel, okay, around the world, or you have a trip to somewhere, فَلَيْسَ عَلَيْكُمْ جُنَاحٌ. There is no sin upon you, and تقصروا من الصلاة, in shortening the prayers. Salatul Qasr, Salatul Musafir, yeah?
Yes.
This ayah talks about Salatul Musafir. إن خفتم أن يفتنكم الذين كفروا. If you fear that the faithless may trouble you, may cause you troubles. إن الكافرين كانوا لكم عدوا مبينا. Indeed, the faithless are your manifest enemies. Your manifest enemies. So the enemies who are really clear, okay, they are your enemies. Look, this ayah first talks about actually the rule, okay? The rule of Salatul Qasr. Like, you might have heard, we have a rule called Salatul Musafir, yes?
Yes.
Qasr Salat is this way, that the prayers which are four rak'at, which have include four rak'at, so they will be performed
two rak'at.
Okay, this the third rak'at and the fourth rak'at, okay, will not be
included.
Will not, you will not perform them. So the, like the same as morning prayer.
Yes.
So the Salatul Maghrib will be the same third, like three rak'at. Okay, we'll have three rak'at. Salatul Fajr will have the two rak'at, but Dhuhr, Asr, and Isha will be shortened to two rak'at. And the niyyah is also changed. You intend this way, I do the two rak'at of Asr prayer as Qasr, for example. Yeah?
Yes.
Qurbatan ilallah. Allahu Akbar. Yes? That's the way. So, but inshallah, we will learn that in the next verses, okay? We'll learn that whenever you or back to your hometown, or wherever you are staying somewhere for 10 days or more than 10 days, okay? So here you must perform the complete salat, okay? There will be no qasr, right? First, in the early Islam, the rule was for those who fear, okay? For those who fear the enemies, if they, for example, perform a complete salat, it takes a bit of time, yes?
Yes.
Yes.
So they might fear the enemies, okay? So you could shorten it. There was no sin if you shortened it, okay? But then this rule became obligatory upon Muslims for the travelers, yeah. But this point as well, we should remember the last point, that we can never leave our salah, okay? Because I'm traveling. We have seen a lot of people, okay? They're traveling, unfortunately. For example, you go from this city to the other city, okay? See, like, the bus stops, okay, for the morning prayer. But you still see some people don't care. If you ask them, well, I'm traveling. Look, I'm tired, so I'm traveling. At least Allah Almighty should be that kind, okay? Allah Almighty is kind, He will forgive us. We should tell them, Allah Almighty is okay, forgiving. But at the same time, if Allah Almighty has told you that you have to do the prayers, no matter you're on travel, on trip, at home, you have to do. Look, Allah Almighty says you should do. But how? Change the formation, okay? But you must do it. Allah Almighty does not say whenever... وَإِذَا طَرَبْتُمْ فِي الْأَرْضِ don't do the prayer.
So is there any situation where namaz not wajib?
No. Every like situation.
Any situation?
No situation.
Like even
Imam Hussein alayhi salam in the battlefield. All right. That's all about tafsir points, okay, that we mentioned. But inshallah, the ahkam, okay, the rulings on how to do the prayers or certain rules are there, okay? Then inshallah, you should refer to the ahkams, the Islamic rulings, tawdih al-masail of your own marja', and also refer to the tafsir books.
IRIB English Radio, in cooperation with Xavier International Schools, presents Let's Recite the Quran.
Okay, Hassan?
Yes.
Ready to go to the Tajweed rules?
Yes.
Inshallah. We'll mention some important ones and then we'll move on to the recitation. وَإِذَا ضَارَبْتُمْ ضَارَ They are heavy letters. ضَارَبْتُمْ The letter ba is pronounced with an echoing sound. وَإِذَا ذَال is pronounced correctly. You should, pronounce it correctly, okay? If you read it, وَإِذَا The same as zal, ze, za, okay? The letter za, it's wrong. Wa iza zarabtum. This changes to a Persian reading while it's Arabic.
Yeah.
So you should pay attention. Wa iza darabtum fil ardi. Arzi, no, ardi. Arz means it has another meaning. Ard has another meaning.
Yes.
Wa iza darabtum fil ardi. فَلَيْسَ عَلَيْكُمْ جُنَاحٌ أَن تَقْصُرُوا جُنَاحٌ There is a tanween, but there is no rule applied. أَن تَقْصُرُوا It's, there is a rule, okay, that says you should hide the sound of
نون
نون ساكين
إخفاء.
Okay, Hassan, how do you do this? Hide the sound of نون أَن تَقْصُرُوا Hide it, read it
أَن تَقْصُرُوا
أحسن أَن تَقْصُرُوا MashaAllah Hussein Next, the letter qaf appears sakin. So if the letter qaf, ta, ba, jim, dal, if they appear sakin, what do you do?
Verse?
Taqsuru.
Yeah,
qalqala. Qalqala, you echo the sound of the qaf. Taqsuru. Read it.
Taqsuru.
Ahsan, while qaf is also a heavy letter. Taqsuru. تقو heavily أن تقصروا من الصلوات no من الصلاة okay من الصلاة the baby alif on the top of a wow is pronounced with an ah sound it's not wow it's just the base for the alif إن خفتم no changes أن يفتنكم فوات tells us say أن يفتنكم what rule is applied?
Here merging is applied which means idgham.
Idgham. Do it. أيفتناكم. Okay. أيفتنا. Instead of أن يفتنا, أيفتنا. Merge it. This is called إدغام. And also remember that you produce a nasal sound and also extend the sound.
For two beats.
Yes, for two beats. أيفتناكم الذين كفروا. Next one. إن الكافرين نون مشدد always ميم مشدد always okay extend the sound of them
and produce
and
a nasal sound
alright a nasal sound إن الكافرين كانوا لكم عدوا مبينا changes to عدو
One
مبينة. The tanwin is merged with to the meme. عدو مبينة. So, ready to recite after me?
Yes.
We mentioned the tajweed rules. Let's read with the tajweed rules. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
وَإِذَا ضَرَبْتُمْ فِي الْأَرْضِ فَلَيْسَ عَلَيْكُمْ جُنَاحٌ أَن تَقْصُرُوا مِنَ الصَّلَاةِ
وَإِذَا ضَرَبْتُمْ فِي الْأَرْضِ فَلَيْسَ عَلَيْكُمْ جُنَاحٌ أَن تَقْصُرُوا مِنَ الصَّلَاةِ
فليس عليكم جناح أن تقصروا من الصلاة إن خفتم أن يفتنكم الذين كفروا
فليس عليكم جناح أن تقصروا من الصلاة إن خفتم أن يفتنكم الذين كفروا.
So I heard someone said in khiftum hit like with a hidden nun sound. Well, it's not correct, okay? Hidden sound no. You don't apply any rule with the letter hamza ha ha kha ain ghain. Yes? You change nothing. You just read the nun as it is. So, inshallah next time he will not repeat it. إن الكافرين كانوا لكم عدوا مبينا.
إن الكافرين كانوا لكم عدوا مبينا.
صدق الله العلي العظيم.
صدق الله العلي العظيم.
أحسنتم. الله bless you inshallah, brothers and sisters. Thank you so much for being with us and listening to IRIB English Radio. That's it from us for today. Inshallah. In the next session, we'll be talking about Ayah 86 of Surah An-Nisa. Stay with IRIB English Radio. Thank you so much. Thanks to brothers here, Fawad Hassan Hussein Ali Nasser. And thanks to IRIB English Radio, Sevier International Schools Network. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. See you. Wa sallallahu ala Sayyidina Muhammadi wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. وآل محمد وعجل فرجه.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
Thank you.
minutes.
On July 19, 2023, Sky News released an unnerving report on the deplorable conditions of thousands of girls in England.
The most common risk that is posed towards boys and young men is violence, gang violence and stuff, whereas for girls it's not only physical violence, it's sexual abuse and exploitation, it's emotional abuse, it's mental abuse. And a lot of professionals within our field, you know, they put us in under that bracket, that box that even I was in, is complex needs. And essentially what that means is that, you know, we've endured so much trauma or had so many traumatic experiences that they don't know what to do with us. They don't know where to start.
According to the news channel, as many as 60,000 girls in England, often in gangs, are vulnerable to serious violence but are invisible, with most gang prevention services aimed at boys. The Metropolitan Police has found that a third of those affected by gangs are women, despite making up only 0.2% of London's known gang-associated people. Likewise, the charity Red Thread says in 2022, 38% of the vulnerable youths attending hospital were female. These reports are all indicative of gross negligence in caring for the fate of thousands of girls trapped in organized crime gangs. Whereas the most common risk young men are facing is violence, for girls, physical violence is most of the time accompanied by sexual abuse and exploitation, not to mention psychological trauma that would haunt them for the rest of their lives. Words of Anne Longfield, chair of the Commission on Young Lives, it is now clear that thousands of girls are being harmed, sexually assaulted, raped, or controlled in a way and on a scale that is not being recognized. To be honest, the embarrassing fact has been clear for a long time. Every now and then, some revelations of this kind rock the United Kingdom with no meaningful measures taken by the authorities. In November 2019, for example, The Guardian published a report uncannily similar to the one recently published by Sky News, with this headline: thousands of girl gang members are trapped in a cycle of violence and abuse. Figures given in the Guardian article similarly suggested that up to 34% of children involved in gangs are girls. The same year, another tragic revelation came, laying bare the complexity and seriousness of the issue. It was about a 16-year-old girl who had been sexually abused since she was 12, while supposedly under the protection of Children's Social Care in Sheffield. The girl, under the pseudonym of Laura, had been sexually exploited by over 40 adults while she was in care. The scandal showed that neither the girls in gangs nor the girls in care are immune from sexual exploitation. According to Catherine Kelwick, a campaigner, the level of care and supervision she has received at the hospital has been appalling, and she has been treated worse than an animal. But perhaps the most appalling case wherein the girls in danger were ignored is what came to be known as the Rotherham Child Sexual Exploitation Scandal. The scandal consists of the organized child sexual abuse that occurred in the town of Rotherham, South Yorkshire, Northern England, from the late 1980s until 2013-2014. It was a glaring example of the failure of local authorities to act on reports of the abuse throughout most of that period. Professor Alexis Jay, the independent chair of the Center for Excellence for Children's Care and Protection, found that 1,400 children, almost all of them underage girls, were sexually abused in Rotherham between 1997 and 2013.
I blame them as much as I do my perpetrators, and I at least want an apology for the way that I was treated. Because as an adult woman, as a child I knew, didn't know any different, but as an adult woman, I now know that the way I was treated was not correct, was not right, and shouldn't have happened. And not just with me, but then continued to happen with other people.
Offences went unprosecuted despite police and child protection agencies in Rotherham having had knowledge of these crimes for decades.
If all of the authorities involved, officers and members, had been less concerned with their own agendas and prejudices and kept their focus on the children's welfare, some of these children might not have suffered the abuse and brutality we read about and heard about.
We all have a responsibility to protect our young people from these predators. But it's clear from today's report that we, the council, and other agencies that work with us failed in that duty for a significant period of time. For this, I am deeply sorry.
Back then, UK Prime Minister David Cameron said child sex abuse had to be classified as a national threat, as he announced a series of measures to prevent systematic abuse. And now, about a decade later, the UK seems to be back to square one, at least when it comes to girls. Girls and young women from all demographics are targeted by gang members and used to transport drugs and weapons from urban areas to rural locations and coastal towns. A girl's usefulness to a gang, however, is not limited to holding or transporting illicit items. In fact, studies show that there are several roles gang-associated women or girls can take.
Get low, man. Stay safe, though.
For example, wifeys are the girlfriends of gang members, and baby mothers are those who have had children with them. Links, on the other hand, are girls who can be as young as 12 and are expected to have individual or group sex with gang members at any time. According to a 2017 report by the National Crime Agency, NCA, sexual exploitation is a serious risk factor associated with County Line's drugs gangs. In some cases, young women are pimped out to settle drug debts, whereas these girls are all trapped in a cycle of threats, intimidation, and violence. Officials have long been looking the other way. What is at play is some sort of systematic discrimination against female victims in society. The girls in England still have an uphill battle to make themselves seen, their suffering recognized, and their trauma recovered. Despite all women's rights activism, they have been out of sight and out of mind for years, and seemingly they have a long way to go before getting as much attention and support as boys. And seemingly they have a long way to go before getting as much attention and support as boys get in society.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.